You're listening to the Rural Advancement Podcast. Rural Advancement provides resources to empower, equip, and encourage rural pastors and churches. Join our community by visiting us at ruraladvancement.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Rural Advancement. This is the podcast that is by rural leaders and for rural leaders. It is our goal every single week, week in and week out, to bring you content that is not just spoken to the rural church, but is spoken by people who get it, people who have lived, worked, and ministered in small, out-of-the-way places, and people who understand the immense value of the work that God does there. I am your host, Joe Epley, and today we get to have a conversation with Pastor Tommy Hayes, who hails to us from Texas. And when I was talking to him before this podcast, I really enjoyed getting to hear about his story and his journey, because many of us would maybe consider it a privilege or a challenge to pastor one church through revitalization and growth. And it seems like Pastor Tommy has made a career out of it. And so I'm excited to hear about the work he does now, the work he's done, and how he's just been able to help rural churches thrive. And so we're excited to dive into his story. But the first thing I want to say is, Pastor Tommy, how are you today, sir?
Well, good morning, sir. Doing great. I mean, woke up down here in Texas. We don't have any more 100-degree days. It's about 74 outside drinking coffee. So it's a beautiful day.
Well, that's exciting to hear. We don't necessarily peak out on those 100-day or 100-degree days up in Montana very much, but I sympathize. We had our church camps this summer, and it never dropped below 90, and it was just wow. It hit hard. But anyways, yeah, let's dive into your story. We like to, with every guest we have on the podcast, just kind of dive into your journey, tell people how you got from point A to point B, what ministry has looked like, and kind of your connection to the rural church. So tell us a bit of your story, Pastor Tommy.
All right. Well, I worked in a power plant for about 20 years, and God called me into the ministry while I was working. And so I left a pretty good job to go into rural ministry. And as most pastors know, in that area, it's not a thriving economy, I guess you'd say.
Sure.
But so we pastored, and God used us in small churches. We loved the rural churches. The largest church we took was like 12 people. The smallest one was about 5 people, and 3 of them was my family.
Gosh.
So for 28 years, we pastored these rural churches. And as I said, God used us in such a way and supplied us everything we needed to grow these churches. And every church was different, but, you know, we took one church, this one church of 12, and actually the for sale sign was out, the realtor was called, the church was fixing to close, and we took it. And that church, I would wish for every pastor, because it seemed like everyone we talked to came to church. And that church of 12 went to over 100 in 2 years.
Oh, wow.
Then we took on another church, a pastor come in behind us. That church is going to 400 now. And it's just amazing how God used us. But the superintendent that we had, Pastor Rick Dubose, wanted to go and use us, not necessarily for one church at a time, but multiple churches. And so we formed down in the North Texas district a rural ministry. And then we started training and bringing more pastors in and reaching and then supplying their needs and staying with them. And it just become just a tremendous tool to reach out into the rural areas and help these rural pastors. And so we've been doing this since we resigned as our last pastorate. We've been doing this for about 15 years now and just enjoying traveling. We actually reach out. We're in helping in 4 states now.
Oh, pastors. Wow.
And we just love what God has called us to do. And, I guess that's the main part of ministry, is to love what you're doing. Because if you don't, you're not going to do it very good. Mm-hmm. So really, that's how we got started. And some of our churches, the church of 5, we took it. We was there for 4 years in a community of 900 And when we left there, God had used us to raise that church up to running over 70. And so, you know, I hate to always say numbers because I hate to depend on numbers. That's not what we're, or what I believe the ministry's for, is to show numbers. But we did add a lot to the kingdom of God. And that's where our heart is. And basically that's about 30 some odd years in a nutshell.
Man, that's awesome. I first want to applaud you and your wife's faithfulness. Obviously, we know that we live and die as servants of the Lord, and so none of the credit's ours, but it's still so encouraging because, especially on this podcast, we talk a lot about churches that are on the edge and on the brink of closing, and to have someone who says, hey, I'm not just going to answer the call once, but I'm going to answer the call as part of who I am in my life, I think is just a cool thing. But speaking of that, obviously, again, you have faced many churches and now help pastors who might be pastoring these churches that are on the brink of closure, that are walking in with desperate situations. The fact that your range has been 5 to 12 is just not a high range. It's not an easy street kind of ministry where you're just hopping into an already set up staff or an already set up congregation. You're walking into dire circumstances. And I think some of our listeners and some of our rural leaders are also in context where they're probably facing some of these same things. And so how would you encourage pastors to keep going when they face these kind of churches? How do we be less scared of them? How do we jump in with hope and optimism in the face of overwhelming odds?
Well, that's kind of a hard thing to answer because every church is different. Every situation is different. Every pastor's different.
Sure.
So to put it all in one sentence or a couple of sentences is kind of hard, but really we got to, the main thing is to hold true to our calling. What everybody would tell you to hold true to your calling, but just to know that, you know, God is always there with you and to help you. But, well, let me say it like this.
Yeah.
I know what it's like to be there. Yes, I just told you of all the wins. I didn't tell you about the downfalls of our ministry or the problems that I had, you know. I can remember many times preaching a sermon that was, I mean, people were going through two boxes of Kleenexes at a time, you know, one of them Holy Spirit moving sermons, and get so down because there wasn't enough people there or whatever the reason, you know. And on Monday morning, I pull the website up and start looking at open church list, you know.
Sure.
And I know a lot of pastors that I've talked to and coached with say the same thing. It's just, I always tell them, I say, yeah, you feel like you're so low, you're like a snake belly in a wagon wheel rut. You know, that's pretty low.
Wow, that's pretty low. I was going to say, yep, that's about it. You did it. That's the most Texas way to say it's low. That's for sure.
Yes, sir. And, you know, it's just really, we've got to have such a prayer life. In a small church, and you're working outside, most people are working outside the church, and it's hard to keep and maintain a prayer life. But in this scenario, you've just got to stay in contact with God. If you don't keep that prayer life and going, you know, the church will start failing, and even family life sometimes can follow that too. Really, just, I guess, I hate to keep saying it, but you just got to maintain the contact with God.
Yeah.
And it'll get you through anything. To reach out to others. You know, we talk about mentorship. It's just having friends or having someone you can share the load with, I guess.
Mm.
But, you know, Jesus is right there to share the load with us. And I would say that's probably what brought us through so much of our problems is maintaining that prayer life. And when problems start to happen, when situations start to go south, it seems like that's where we start cutting off. We start trying to do too many things on our own, and we forget about, well, we leave God back at the altars, and we don't get in that prayer life anymore. So I would sum that question up in maintain the contact with God and continue that prayer life. The prayer life is the life source.
Yeah, I love that, because I think you're right that when the church is experiencing a downturn, let's say a pastor is experiencing that turnover in a community, or their church drops, or they come into a community, there's a small church, I know my personality is always tempted to say, well, I'll just try another thing and another thing and another thing. And, right. You know, you just get kind of desperate to say what can work and whatever. But I love that take. I think that call back to a spiritual centeredness of saying, hey, I'm gonna stay connected to God and let him worry about things like growth and that kind of thing.
Amen. Yeah.
That's powerful stuff. Well, let's dive into some of the practical maybe side of what it looks like to, you know, kind of function in a small town. I mean, it would be one thing if you said, hey, Joe, I've had a lot of experience maintaining churches where they're at, you know, because that might be a different thing, but you've had growth. I mean, you've got to watch that happen. So the first thing that I found very interesting is you talked about the Dollar General principle. And obviously, a lot of our rural listeners would be familiar with what a Dollar General is. But when we talk about the importance of either being involved in your community, developing community, maybe start with that example, but talk about, you know, how we, you know, about community a little bit.
Yeah, if the reaching into your community is the main thing, to grow a church, you're not going to grow a church staying inside the four walls and Sunday and Wednesday night. That doesn't work. And if it's ever worked anywhere, I've never heard of it. But you've got to reach out. You got to start building the relationships into your community. You've got to let people know that there is a church. One of the churches, that church that I was talking about with five people, got a job down at the local grocery store, sacking groceries.
Oh, really?
And as I was sacking groceries, I was telling people I was the pastor of the Assembly of God Church there in the community. And a community of 900 with not much of a main street. And they said, when did we get an Assembly of God Church? I didn't know it was there.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So a lot of things, a lot of the situation is just letting people know that you're there. And you mentioned the Dollar General. I love the Dollar General story. Back in 2017, it was a list of stores, and they were projected to that year open 1,041 stores. Mm-hmm. And out of the 1,041 stores, it came to be that Dollar General opened 810 of them. 80% of that total, that 1,041, were Dollar General. And I like what we in the church business would call the mission statement. The mission statement of the Dollar General store was to put a store in the poorest community, supply their need, and they would support us. Mm. And that has worked. I mean, you and I talked before that we know where there's a gas station, a feed store, and a Dollar General, and that's all that's in a community. But that Dollar General is there. And if you ever go into some of these Dollar General stores, you'll notice that not every one of them is the same as far as their inventory, because they change the inventory to whatever that community is needing. Mm. They meet the needs of their community. So if we as a church could take that and say, okay, this community here, we see this need here. It might be unwed mothers. It might be single parents. It could be all kinds of different scenarios. And once the church realizes that and then says, okay, let's meet this need. And then as you meet the need of the community, you build that relationship. And when you build that relationship, then they come and support the church. Mm. It's a vicious circle. But all we have to do is just, I mean, Jesus, when we read about Jesus, I don't remember reading where he stayed in a building and preached. He got out in amongst the people in the community and build a relationship and met the needs of the people that he encountered. And we're supposed to follow those tracks. And to do that, that means, I usually say this, and don't take this the wrong way, but when I preach it, I tell people we've got to get up off of our assets and we need to move out of the church.
Gosh, that was great. Thank you for that statement.
And that's it. We've got to reach out, because so many times people don't know where the church is. They don't even know that church exists. And until you start meeting their needs, they're not going to recognize you.
So I really love also the fact that, like, I think sometimes as pastors, and I think it's easy to do, so I don't think anyone's wrong for doing it, but I think we all build churches based on, you know, things we're passionate about or things we're gifted in. Right. But what you seem to be suggesting is, like, hey, you've got to let the community determine your church. You know, you kind of have to let that be where the Holy Spirit speaks, and kind of lay yourself down to say, hey, I didn't think I was going to be starting an addiction ministry or a ministry to unwed mothers or an after school program, but what is the need, you know, and letting that kind of inform your strategies is really cool.
Yeah, yeah. We, in meeting with in some of these churches, and what we do, we meet, we coach, and we even supply products. And different churches, I come across a lot of diapers. I was getting like 5,000 diapers a month. And a lot of these churches were taking them. Then they was calling me up and saying, well, we don't have a need. But then there was other churches that said, we opened the diaper pantry and we can't keep enough. So that tells you right there, you know, some churches didn't have that need, but other churches did, you know. So we kind of switched around and got the pastor to kind of look at it. And there again, you know, a lot of churches said, well, we'll open a food pantry. Well, you've got to know your community, because there might be another church doing a food pantry. And believe me, when you're in a rural church and you try to go against a church that's already doing something,
not a good day.
That's not good at all. So you've got to know your community. And when you reach out to meet that need, you got to make sure nobody else is doing it. Or if that's what you want to do, then support the one that's already going.
Yeah, for sure. So my next question comes out of one of my favorite quotes that you mentioned. You know, you said, we close the doors. You know, when we encounter problems as a church, one of our first steps is actually to close the doors. Instead, we really should be looking to throw the doors open wide. And the reason I love this statement is because I think, left to our own devices, you know, because we talk about living, just kind of living, or living intentionally. And I think if we don't live intentionally, pastors will fall prey to this kind of pull or tug. And so maybe unpack what you found in that experience and how to help pastors resist that urge to kind of turn inward, you know? So talk about some of the things you've encountered and what you mean by that.
Oh man, that's probably something we come across so much, you know, that the pastor, so many things that he has tried to reach the community and it failed. And now the congregation is fighting the pastor because, well, we can't do anything. You've tried this and this, and it didn't work. And so all of a sudden, they just shut down completely. Mm-hmm. And like I told you, we shut the doors to the community because inside we're not in agreement. And that can hurt. That can cause a failure in a church. And so many times we close the churches because of that. So what we tell pastors, when trouble happens, you know, you got to stay true to the calling, and you got to leave the doors open no matter what. Even if it just means going down to the local grocery and sack groceries, we got to keep the hand extended to welcome people into the church. When we try to keep people out, that's when we fall into trouble. And that's when we see so many failures. But again, it's really not rocket science. If the doors aren't open, you're not growing.
Yeah.
If the doors are open, yes, pastors go through a lot of problems trying to meet that need in their community and trying to get that right niche to work. And we work with a lot of churches that they, well, one church, for instance, a church, I think they were running 12 to 15. And I went up there and spoke with, well, I spoke with the board, which was the whole church. And I said, okay.
Sorry, that's really great.
Yeah.
All we have left is the leadership, turns out.
Yeah, that's it, you know. Well, and I asked them, I said, what have you tried? And they told me what they have attempted. And I said, well, let's do the Easter egg hunt. Well, now, Pastor, we did that before, and we only got like 10 people. And I said, well, how did y'all do it? And they was telling me how they did it. And I said, let's tweak it just a little bit. Let's try something different, but let's continue on like that. And so we did. And that church, we kind of went through. And again, they didn't have too many people to do it. So I brought some people from other churches to help. You know, it's amazing the churches around other churches that when you're in a situation where you need help and you put out a call to help, how they'll come. Well, other churches sent people over there to help them through this Easter egg hunt, because I'm one of those believers that unless you expect it, it's not going to happen.
Sure.
And so we set up the Easter egg hunt. We put out more eggs than they ever thought about doing.
Sure.
And we had over 100 people at that Easter egg hunt.
Dang.
That sounds real good. That following Sunday, that church of 12 went to 36.
Wow.
And you think, well, that's just because of the Easter egg hunt, you know, and people coming. And I said, yeah, that's
true.
Church
yeah. In one sense, it's true. Sure.
Yeah. And that church maintained after that for 6 months, 32 people.
Wow.
So they went from 12 to 32 on a regular basis simply because they just did the same thing but tweaked it. You know, sometimes pastors get into the mindset, well, this is the only way we can do this. But let's do something, just a few different things. And like one of the main things they were doing Easter egg hunting, putting the prizes in the eggs. Well, they had older kids just going through looking for prize egg. Well, I had them sign up, and we gave the prizes away after the egg hunt on a drawing. So you had everybody to stay there. And guess what? Before the drawing, the pastor gets up and gives a message about Jesus Christ, because where they're going, they can't leave because they're wanting the prize.
Yeah,
it's just think things out in certain scenarios and just tweak what you've tried before. We tell the pastors, but too many pastors have tried it a certain way. It fails. And so they close the door. You know, we don't know how else to do this. And I could talk an hour on that one.
Yeah.
Of scenarios where we've been in situations that we have come across, and pastors just, they get to a point where they've had so many failures, they're afraid to try anything else. And the congregation has worked with them so many times that they won't support anything else. And so when that happens, that's when the doors close. And that's when the church starts losing.
Sure.
But there's hope out there.
Yeah. I really like that idea. And I would hope somebody listening would just recognize that maybe it is possible that the best idea of your church really is just one small adjustment away. I think a lot of football, you know, a lot of us watch the NFL, and you watch college football, and you just think about the fact that, especially in the NFL, this pool of players and coaches doesn't change that much. And yet sometimes it's just getting one extra person in a different spot or one coaching staff that changes, and suddenly you got a Super Bowl team. It's just crazy the minor adjustments that make the magic happen. And so I love that hope and that encouragement to hey, maybe if you're a defeated pastor, just try something a little different. Like if you can kickstart that spark, like, man, that could be fun.
And see, in that same scenario that you just used, the winning team last year, they had the great running back, and so everything was centered around the running back. And this year, he graduated, and all we have is receivers. Well, we get a quarterback that can throw.
Passing game it is then, yeah, exactly.
You've got to reach what and use what you have available and use that. I'm going to write that down. I like that scenario. Thank you.
Man, it's just mutual learning. That's what we're doing. Hey, let's talk this next question. What's the importance of mentorship in the life of a local pastor? Because, and maybe really, you know, how do we even reach out, and why should we reach out? Because I think if I ask any pastor point blank, should someone have someone speaking in their life, all of them are going to tell me yes. But you and I would both agree that maybe that belief doesn't always translate into action. So how, right. You know, double down on it. Why is it so important? And how do we overcome that hesitation to reach out?
See, knowing a lot of the rural pastors that I do, and they would never admit, just like you said, the rural pastors that we've come in contact with, and even when we pastored, we felt like we were in an island. We felt like we were out there. And sometimes geographically, they are. I mean, they're way out there by themselves. I remember in one of my trainings, I said, yeah, I can remember pastoring this one church and taking a suitcase and kissing my family goodbye and went to the grocery store. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how far out we were. But a lot of pastors think that they're alone in this endeavor. And so they hesitate reaching out, and they become like a turtle and go into a shell and sure. Just they don't know what to do. So in mentoring, we try to get pastors in contact with pastors, because pastors need that communication with another pastor. They might be going through problems, and this other pastor is going through different things, but they can talk and bounce off of each other. If a pastor doesn't have a sounding block, it can build up, and that can be very explosive on him. And he needs that relief. And I know we have our meetings, our different
Yeah, there
meetings
are some get-togethers throughout the year.
There's
sure.
always fellowship yeah. meetings and everything. And that's great, but there's always a certain time that you have for fellowship. And then we have to go back home. And that's when you make the friendship, but yet it's afterwards that one-on-one that the pastor needs to bounce ideas off, or to hear what someone else is going through. You know, hang up the phone and say, man, he's got a lot of troubles. I ain't got nothing over here, you know. But you just need that communication with other pastors just to bounce things off, or just to talk about the fishing.
Sure.
You know, just to have a friend. You know, we always talk about, all pastors will say, you know, I want to introduce you to my best friend, Jesus Christ. And we do have that friend. We can talk to him anytime, anywhere. But we also need someone else that is in a close situation, what we're in, and feel a fellowship and feel a mentorship, you know, and we mentor back and forth. Mm. And that is so important for a rural pastor, because when we feel like we're out there by ourselves, that's when we get in trouble. Mm. And that's when we don't call out for help when we need help.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. Even it seemed like your language left room, not just for mentorship, but really just companionship, just saying, hey, whether it's, I don't even think it has to be someone who's like, man, so distinctly, you know, above you or farther along than you, if that's the wording we can use it. It can just be a fellow, a comrade, you know. It's just like, hey, let's get somebody we can talk to.
Yeah. Yeah. The pastors need that lifeline for reaching out. And it's just, I guess the reason why I really push that so much is because when I pastored, I didn't have it.
Mm. When you feel it.
And I see the importance of having that. In fact, it's just I can't remember getting a call even from my district. You know, when I was pastoring, I would get a call if I was late on my tithes.
But sure, no, you're I didn't like, not say the kind that. Of support I needed. No. We'll definitely edit that out or leave it. I don't know. It'll be fun. So,
but you know, you just need a friend.
Man, that's good encouragement. Let's look at our last question here. I know that you do, again, you work with churches, kind of do these trainings or different things. And one of the most fun examples that I heard you mention was talking about how you show pastors these pictures of different trucks and use that to teach them something. And so walk us through that metaphor. Why the trucks? Well, you know, describe it for us, and then what you use it for and what you're teaching pastors.
Why the trucks? I am a truck man. I drive a truck. I mean, you know, I guess everybody says when you're in Texas, you have a truck and a cow. You know?
Yeah.
And but talking with pastors a lot, and a lot of times the failure of, I hate to use the word failure, sometimes the problems pastors have is they see the problems in their church, they don't see the numbers increasing, and so they begin to look. And they look down the road and they think, well, you know, how's he got a congregation over 100? I know I'm a better preacher than he is, you know, and I'm a lot better looking.
And, sure.
But so I use this scenario. I take a truck that is nothing but a cab and chassis, nothing on it. And then I take another truck that is decked out, got all the bells and whistles on it and looks sharp. And I tell pastors, I said, which one of these trucks would you want? And of course, you know what they're going to. And I said, so many times we sit there in our office when we're going through some problems and we look down the road at this truck when in reality we have the other truck. And so I said, let's look at this other truck and let's compare that. Let's let that be represent our church. And so what does it take to move that truck?
Well, tires, they, of course, you know, yeah.
You know, one thing, they got to have an engine. So in using the engine scenario, I tell them, well, you know, what if the engine represents the preaching?
Sure.
And, you know, then you got to have tires. Well, you can, there's so many things you can do on the tires. You got to have tires so it can roll. And so you can use that for one of them as praise and worship. One of them as administration. We do have to have administration in a church. We got to have the form of that. We got to have prayer, you know, different things like this. So we got tires, we got an engine, and now we need a driveline. Well, the driving force of a church is Jesus.
Yeah.
And so we have that. And then the electrical system, it can represent the Holy Spirit because it controls everything.
Sure.
You know, and so I tell them, what does it take to move this church? Look at your church. What is needed in your church to get it up off a high center and moving? And then that's when we start talking about the different things. You don't have to have the fancy church or all the things over there. You don't have to have the 20 classes. Because you don't have that many people, but if you have one class. So the church, the truck represents that church, and it gets the pastor thinking, what, well, you know, maybe I don't have to have it. I don't have to have the mag wheels. I can just have baby moons to make it look good.
There you go.
Now, you're too young to know what baby moons are.
Oh, probably, but I think I get the concept for sure.
But it's things like this that when you just put something out there and you get the pastors actually thinking about their church and thinking, okay, what do I, you know, we don't have to have brakes to move a truck. You know, we get the church going. We don't want to stop it anyway. So you don't have to put a lot of emphasis in a master cylinder or anything like that. So sure. You can just be worried about getting it to move forward. And it seems like it really works good because when we start talking about it, I can start seeing these pastors out there thinking and then they start coming up and I just start writing on the whiteboard all their different ideas of what this can represent. And it really works good. But the main thing is to get their eyes off of the tricked out truck and get it on theirs, get it on their church. And seeing what it takes to move their church. And when you do that, then you start seeing movement in their church. And it's working good. I've seen a lot of churches go through it. And I've seen some grow 50 to 100%, and I've seen them grow 500 and 700% in a matter of
I
a
love
short
that.
period.
Cool. Well, hey, Pastor Tommy, as we draw to a close here, I just want to say thanks again for your time. This has been an awesome conversation.
Well, sir, I've enjoyed it. I love talking about rural. I love helping pastors and churches. And like I said, you've got my phone number. If there's anything I can ever do, just let me know.
Absolutely. Well, hey, from all of us at Rural Advancement, we want to say thanks again. We hope that if you are a leader tuning in, that you are walking away encouraged and challenged, you know, feeling seen and inspired. Once again, we know that God is so much involved in what the rural church does. He is there. We are there for you. I have been your host, Joe Epley. He has been Pastor Tommy Hayes, and we will see you next week.